have Justin Osagen with me via phone. He is a local farmer and a regular to the station. So glad to have you with us, Justin. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for giving me a phone call this morning.
always. Well, it is finally May. It is finally warm. The snow is gone on the lake and mostly gone up in the hinterland, I hear. Is it a crazy time of year for you or what?
You know, every spring or every winter, it just seems like spring will never come. We've got such a short summer up here, and I get real antsy as we get into May thinking, I've got a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of snow on the ground, and it's too cold. But, you know, eventually the gods send summer to us. You know, spring does arrive, and there's always a big crunch period as we get into May. Lots of work to do here on the farm once warm weather arrives.
Yes, and you took time out for us. We're grateful. Let's talk a little bit about berries. Everyone, we hear a lot about berries. There's a lot of berry picking, self-berry picking that goes on in this part of the region. A lot of people have berries in their freezer. I know our community dinner is going to have some berries involved. And it sounds like you're expanding your berry operation.
I sure am. You know, we moved here, it'll be 7 years ago in July. Came from the big, mean city of Chicago, and I wanted kind of a quieter life, and I also wanted to be self-employed. And I had the dream my whole life of running a berry farm. So when we got up here, put in blueberries, and then a few years later, put in strawberries. And wow, the berries have just been such a fun crop to raise and lots of interest. They're easy to sell. And last year, we doubled the number of row feet that we have of strawberries. I'd put in, what was it? The first time I put in 12 200-foot-long rows of strawberries, and I thought, wow, this is a whole bunch. Well, you know, they were very productive, but we sure couldn't keep up with demand. And so last summer, we did a lot of prep work, and we've got another, I think we've got 10 150-foot more rows going in this year.
Whoa.
Yep. So, you know, it's lots of work, but you get things put in, you get the mulch put down, and you know, they don't grow themselves by any means, but with good prep, you can reduce the amount of work that you need to do out there. And, you know, I'm such a big fan of mulching. It means less time weeding. I know a lot of people don't like weeding. They view it as such an onerous task. I actually love weeding, but, you know, there are only 24 hours in a day, and I don't want to work every one of those 24 hours. And so we work a lot with mulch.
Yeah.
And it really keeps the weeding to a minimum for us.
And is your berry operation, I mean, maybe you don't know quite yet, but some things you raise them and it's really hard to break even or make a profit of any kind, despite all your labor. How does the berry crop measure up that way?
Berries are a labor-intensive crop. You know, they're small, and the act of picking the berries can be pretty time-consuming. But that said, they're a high-value crop. You make a lot more money for a pint of strawberries or blueberries than you would make on, say, a pint of cherry tomatoes. So although it's labor intensive, the market price for those berries is pretty high. And you know, the other thing is I'm doing something I love, and it's really hard to put a price on that.
Well, and as someone, I mean, we pretty much eat only local berries, freeze them all year. I'm too lazy to can. Just very grateful for expanding berry businesses in the area. So that is really good
and
news,
you know,
for us.
Though any kind of berry freezes so easily.
I know.
There's basically no prep you need to do. You buy those fresh berries, you dump them into a Ziploc bag and throw them in the freezer. And then all winter long, you pull out a bag of berries, and there you've got berries for your blueberry cobbler, for a blueberry pie, you know, whatever you want to do, pancakes.
Right.
It's so easy once you pull them out of the freezer.
We actually often just have them for dessert, like just pull out a few berries and just, it's like a little splash of summer in the middle of winter, just indescribably delicious.
One of my childhood treats and a thing I often got in trouble for was going to open the freezer and eating blueberries directly out of the bag.
And you're not alone. Anyway, all right, well, we got a lot more to say. I hear you are now supplying restaurants and food manufacturers. That's excellent news. Tell us more.
Well, you know, it's still pretty small scale. And to be honest, I've always been a little bit afraid of guaranteeing a crop.
Right.
You know, as a farmer, you're victim to the weather, to, you know, what germination rate did you have on your plants? But I've got a couple of different food producers and restaurants that really want to buy from small farmers. And they understand all of the dangers of, you know, in March saying, can you provide me with thousands of pounds of kohlrabi? And I'll say, yes, I will do my best. But we're going to see, you know, are the rabbits going to get in there? Will the deer get in there? Will I have a failure? But it's a new venture for me. I've typically done direct-to-consumer sales. You know, those direct-to-consumer sales are sort of like, you know, a quart of berries at a time or a pound of potatoes at a time. And there's something really nice about selling, you know, 1,000 pounds of potatoes at a time.
Right.
You make a little bit less money when you sell in bulk. But on the other hand, you've got a guaranteed market when that crop comes in.
Right. And I would think there's, you know, less packaging, less time sitting at a farm stand, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I absolutely love setting up my tent at the farmer's market and interacting with people, answering their questions, introducing new fruits and vegetables to them. But it can be time consuming. And so when you've got kind of a guaranteed market, you know, a guaranteed buyer for what you produce, it does eliminate that time sink that sitting out in that parking lot selling out of your farmer's market tent can be.
Yes. I mean, I think it's wonderful how farmers do that. And I think it's a lot of time. And I love it when they find other ways to feed us. Did these wholesalers come to you, Justin, or did you pursue them? I'm trying to figure out how this market works.
You know, there are people who've come to me. The organic farming community here in the larger Duluth area on the North Shore, it's a pretty tight community. We all pretty much know one another. And the buyers who are interested in sourcing the food for their restaurant or for their food manufacturing, if they want to secure that locally, they pretty much come to us. You know, so many things in life are based upon personal contact. You know, who do you know? And, you know, these are folks that I'd met through the farming community. And, you know, so they approached me and said, can you grow this product for me? And thought about it a bit before I said yes, but then I said yes.
Yeah. And along with that, I mean, it looks like you're just expanding. You also needed some dauntingly expensive equipment, as you mentioned. Tell us a little bit about how you managed to acquire it.
Well, I tell you what, we started out here with about 3/4 of an acre, and I was cultivating all of that with a rototiller that I inherited from my in-laws. And we've grown a lot, and my hand tools and that toy-built rototiller that's now about 40 years old, it was just, we needed bigger, more complex equipment. So this past spring, I applied for a grant through the Whole Foods Co-op in Duluth, and they have a program where you can round up the total on your sale. So if your total is $10.78, you can round up to $11, and those few extra pennies go into a fund that they then disperse to local growers to support their operations. So I applied for one of these grants, and we've got a fancy, new to us, John Deere tractor that's got a 5-foot-wide rototiller on the back and just a number of attachments that will really free up a lot of my time. I can get more done in less time, and I can expand. So, and that's my dream, is to expand into about 5 acres of intensively produced gardens.
Wow. Well, you must have a knack, Justin, because you're making this sound easy. But as someone who has rounded up at the co-op, I am so thrilled to hear where some of that money is going. And it is such a good system, because you really, I mean, who notices the few cents? But if it happens every few seconds throughout the working day, it does clearly build up into something that will actually make a valuable difference for somebody. So that's just really cool to hear.
I am so grateful to the co-op. You know, I've been dreaming of a tractor for years, and the equipment that I needed was pretty pricey. I didn't want to buy new just because you pay a premium to get brand new, but a neighbor had this fantastic tractor and it was available. And, you know, between this generous gift from the co-op and the cost share that we then provided, we're able to bring that home. And in fact, I've got to tell you that today is the first day that I'm going to be using that tractor to get some plot preparation done, because I've got peas and beets going in today before we've got dry soil right now. Tomorrow's supposed to be rainy. So today's my little window to get these cool weather crops in the ground.
Fantastic. Good luck with that.
Thank
tell
you.
Us briefly, if you can, about Farm Trail, another new exciting development for the Clover Valley area farmers, I believe.
Sure. So there has been a little boom in the number of small organic farms popping up in the area between Two Harbors and Duluth. Much of it's concentrated on that corridor around Homestead Road. So this last November, I gathered together all of these farmers and I said, look, you know, let's do a collaborative project where we can have some self-serve farm stands and residents, tourists, anybody could drive from farm to farm and purchase items that we produce on our farms. And so for the past 6 months, we've had a meeting every few weeks and we're going to pull this thing off. We start on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. That'll be the first day that we're open. Early in the spring, there's not going to be lots of produce. I'm not going to have any fruit available, but we're going to have a lot of seedlings for folks who are putting in their own gardens, you know, tomato plants and pepper plants, things like that. Some of our vendors have prepared foods that they'll be selling. One of the prepared foods that I'll have available is a granola that has been super popular and the backbone of my non-produce sales. So anyway, this farm trail will be open weekly and it will run from Memorial Day until about October 1st.
That is really exciting. And I would think, you know, anyone who the main problem with local purchasing has always been the Saturday morning dilemma. If you can't get to the market on the Saturday morning, now you can go for a beautiful drive, stop by many different farms and pick up what you need. I think it's a brilliant idea.
There's been such an interest in nationally, really, and consumers want to know where their food comes from. So this is a grand opportunity for local residents to come out to the farms that are producing the food that shows up on their dinner table.
Yeah, that's just so great.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you advertise that? Like, how are we going to know when it's open? And also, are there vegetables just out on stands or will they be in coolers or how is that going to work?
So we've got a bunch of PR going on right now. I just had a long interview 2 days ago with the newspaper in Duluth, and Business North, which is a business newspaper, ran an article a few months ago. We've got brochures that will be placed in hotels and in tourist information centers. We're doing our best to get the word out. And of course, here I am talking with you on the radio, but we really want the local community to support us. We're trying to get the word out as best we can. We're having a bunch of signs printed up right now. How will purchasing that stuff work from farm stands? The model that I've used, and each farm is going to be a little bit different, is that I have a farm stand that I stock whenever I've got stuff available. So for much of the summer, it's going to be 7 days a week that someone can drive past the farm. There will be an honor payment box where people put their money in the box. I use a little mailbox with a hole cut in the top to slip your payment into. So, you know, we really want to approach the world thinking we're going to trust the consumers to pick what they want.
Yes.
And then pay for it. You know, you get out of the world what you put in. And I think if you approach people with trust that they're going to do the right thing, I think they will. I've had a farm stand in the past, and as far as I know, nothing's ever been taken and not paid for. And I guess if anything did get taken and not paid for, I just need to tell myself they needed food and just didn't have the money right now. And I'm cool with that. So some farm stands will be set up to take credit cards. I'm not really a Luddite, but I've not figured out that process. So I need to do a little training with a neighbor who's a bit more astute with this stuff than I am. But I know that we're moving towards less and less cash in the society. So I got to figure out that credit card thing. But there won't necessarily be the farmer sitting down at the farm stand to answer questions and ring up your order. Oftentimes when someone stops by my farm stand, I'll be out in the market garden, which is right next to the stand. And if I see them there for a while, sometimes I'll wander down that way and just answer questions or say hello. And it's nice to have that interaction with the people stopping by.
Yeah, but I do love that you don't have to be there. And I absolutely love and appreciate your approach to money, Justin. And I think it's really, I agree with you. I think for the most part, people do the right thing. I know that our sailing business, we operate on high levels of trust also and have very rarely been stood up. And I just think it's money is all the way you approach it. And if you just say, actually, we're just going to trust people, you know, 99% will be so honored that they would go to great lengths to demonstrate their trustworthiness. So I just think that's great. And I think it will work in your favor also because it allows you to get your work done and not have to constantly be monitoring your station. So I am just a big fan. I'm sure I'm going to take some drives out there and I hope you get a growing interest. And I just can't believe it will be anything but that. So
yeah, we have every expectation that this is going to be a success. You know, as I said, I've had a farm stand. But now somebody driving out here to the country, rather than just having my farm stand to stop by, they can pick from 11 different ones. Yeah. And hopefully they're going to visit a number of those on a trip out here to the country.
Well, we will definitely have to talk about it as the season goes on. I'm also hoping to have you back soon because we're going to talk about our third Friday community dinner coming up. But that will have to wait because we are completely out of time. So thanks so much, Justin. We'll have you back soon.
Great. Thanks, Katya.
That was Justin Osagian. He is a local farmer up in Clover Valley. And like I said, we'll have him back soon.